JC Corcoran Podcast.
Here at the new Busch Stadium in downtown St. Louis, and it looks like it's just about time to sing the national anthem.
That's right, Joe. And singing tonight is Pamela Bell, winner of local grocery store Schnucks Anthem Idol Contest.
I hear the girl can sing.
Well, let's go to the field.
Ladies and gentlemen, here tonight to honor our country by singing the national anthem, please welcome Pamela Bell.
The what? Soap or a hell, baby, yeah.
That's right.
Let's blame me. The Who's brought the stripes and right roars. Oh, the ramrods we watched. And the rockets, red glare, the bombs bursting up in the air. Give a little boo. Through the night. That I've made nothing. For it's one to need to track your way out. And
just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Wednesday, July 27th, 2022, 108 days remaining in our American democratic system of government, as we have known. And how you doing, kids? You're at jcontheline.com. Well, we haven't talked for two whole days because yesterday had a big technological meltdown in my studio, and it took until like, something like 11 o'clock yesterday morning before everything was back up and running, so we had to cancel the podcast. Did I miss anything? God, it's still raining across the area this morning. Come on. And I suppose it would be a legitimate question to ask, how in the hell do the weather guys miss this? Well, I think I know the answer, because when you see something, you know, I'm sure that this popped up on all of the weather guys' computers. Like, say it's, you know, Monday night and all the weather people are looking at their computers and they're thinking to themselves, well, according to this, we're going to get 10 inches of rain, but that obviously isn't going to happen. That's sort of an anomaly of some kind. And, you know, got to get 10 inches of rain. If you're a weather guy, that's totally counterintuitive. So you just say, well, there could be some heavy downpours. And I think what happened yesterday qualified. Talk more about that here in just a little while. That opening that I just played from Saturday Night Live, you wonder how stuff like that happened. I've not been able to figure out how they chose St. Louis and even mentioned schnooks and stuff like that. I don't know how that happened. Usually, the way something like that happens is that one of the writers or somebody who's hanging around for whatever reason is from St. Louis, and they're like, hey, just put this in here. It's a shout-out to my hometown, whatever. So you get that every once in a while. But to my knowledge, nobody who's writing or who was writing for Saturday Night Live at that time was from St. Louis. So I don't really know how that happened. I am frequently asked about the David Letterman thing. The David Letterman thing back in the, let's see, what year would this have been? I guess probably 89 sounds right. I'd have to look it up. But what had happened is that one of the writers had this idea, let's show baggage coming down the carousel. And they were going to do it at LaGuardia. And apparently LaGuardia was like, no, we can't do that. And so they tried Kennedy. Kennedy said no. So somebody said, well, what do you want to do again? And somehow it ended up in the lap of somebody from TWA. And so the TWA people said, all right, look, the New York situation just isn't going to work out. But we have a hub in St. Louis, because you'll recall TWA had the big hub in St. Louis. And they said, if you just want to bring everybody to St. Louis, you can do it at Lambert International. And so that's how that happened. They wouldn't let them do it in New York, so they ended up doing it at Lambert International. And notice I didn't say Lambert Field. You know why? Because I was beaten into submission by Julius Hunter. If you ever, in the Channel 4 newsroom, and I worked there for 7 years, if you said Lambert Field, there would be this big booming voice that would pop out. He'd go, Lambert International. He said Lambert Field made us sound like we were living in some sort of rural community. And he's probably right too. You know, airports sort of define your community to a lot of people who aren't from there. But anyhow, going back to the Letterman story, so they brought the whole crew to St. Louis. There was a writer by the name of Fred Graver, and he was involved in it, and also my buddy Chris Albers. Chris has been one of my best friends for almost 40 years now, and Chris and I go all the way back to when he was working. He was going to school at SLU High and invited me to speak at a pep rally, and so we've known each other all the way back to 1984, I guess. And he was a writer for Letterman and Bill Maher and Jon Stewart and eventually Conan for something like 14 years. He was the monologue writer for Conan O'Brien. And he had a hand also in engineering the luggage carousel bit with Letterman at Lambert International. And so I knew that they were going to do it because they were talking about it like a week in advance. Well, there was something going on between Letterman and Bill Bolster. Now, let me just tell you, I could do a dissertation. It would take 2 hours about Bill Bolster. You want to talk about a guy who was larger than life, both physically and, I guess, on every other level, too. Bill Bolster was the general manager at Channel 5 back in the 80s and part of the 90s. Now, Bill Bolster is the guy who the main company brought into St. Louis to turn things around at Channel 5. And he constructed and engineered and executed his plan, which was to turn Channel 5 KSTK-TV into a powerhouse. And I'll be goddamned if he didn't do exactly that. All the old stuff was gone. All the new stuff was put in. A lot younger reporters. They brought Deanne Lane in from Michigan. She was, I think, 22 at the time. Jennifer Blome was only about 22 or 23 at the time. They brought in Bob Richards, who had been out east doing the weather. They brought him into St. Louis. They brought Mike Bush in from Kansas City. And behind the scenes, there were producers and assistant news directors and people like that who were tremendous. And you know me, I'm pretty critical of electronic media. But I'm telling you, that group at Channel 5, there was a news director there by the name of Steve Antonetti, and he had a beautiful wife who was redheaded. And one day she was out on Chesterfield Airport Road. She had just dropped off the kids at school, and the roads were slick, and she was on those sort of windy roads, Chesterfield Airport Road, especially Wild Horse Creek Road, which at the time, 1984, where, it isn't like it is now, where it's all populated and built up and everything like that. It was like living in Nebraska, and a squirrel comes shooting across the road. She hits the brakes, because she's an animal lover. She hits the brakes. The car goes out of control, flips over, ends up in a ditch, and she ends up like in call it a body cast, but she was laid up for a long time. I remember she broke her hip. I remember that story. But anyhow, then behind the scenes, there was, these producers, Carla Gaines, I remember was one of them, and Mort Meisner, who's a big agent. Now, somebody told me that at Channel 5, almost everybody who's under contract at Channel 5, their agent is this guy, Mort Meisner, who at the time, back in the 80s, was a producer at Channel 5. These people were young, they were enthusiastic, they really knew their shit, and Bill Bolser somehow found all of them, put them all together in one building, in one newsroom, and the rest literally is history. Because for a number of years there, at 10 o'clock at night, you could have taken all of the other television stations in St. Louis, combined all of their ratings, and it still didn't even get close to the ratings at 10 o'clock on Channel 5. Plus, they were coming off that must-see TV stuff with Warren Littlefield and, Cheers and The Cosby Show and Frasier and all that sort of stuff. That didn't hurt. And they were doing those Bob and Mike promos for, if it's sports, Mike will show it to you. And perhaps most importantly, back in those days, the companies weren't like they are now, pinching every last goddamn penny. Back then, they spent money like crazy because they knew the old adage, you have to spend money to make money. So anyhow, back to the Bill Bolser story. He's the vice president and general manager of the whole station. A very, very large man, very tall and very, very proud of his home state of Iowa and his alma mater, the University of Iowa. I mean, he'd walk around, wearing the logos, the insignias on everything. I saw numerous interviews with him, print interviews, stuff like that. And then he was always talking about Iowa. Just remember that part of the story for a minute, and we'll come back to it. So now, David Letterman gets the coveted 11:30 time slot right after Johnny Carson. Boom, let's go. Not exactly. Bill Bolser, I believe, was not impressed with David Letterman. And also, he figured, no, wait a minute. If I just go ahead and, allow David Letterman's show to run after Johnny Carson, all I really get at Channel 5 is a couple of availabilities for some local commercials. But if I delay David Letterman's show by half an hour and move it to 12:05 and put in Love Connection, I get to sell a lot more commercials during that show because that's a syndicated show as opposed to a network show. So that's what I'm going to do. And all of a sudden, Love Connection comes on at 11:35. Old Mr. 2-2 Chuck Woolery sitting there. And then fans of David Letterman had to wait until 12:05, and Dave heard about this. He didn't like it. I mean, Jay Leno used to do this all the time. Jay Leno was always on the phone during the day, yakking with general managers and station managers of stations all over the country, NBC affiliates, trying to get on their good side, because later on, how important that became. David Letterman didn't do a lot of that stuff, but he figured, well, maybe if I just pick up the phone and call Bill Bolser in St. Louis, and we chat a little bit. Maybe I could sweet talk him. Maybe I can figure out some way to get him to cancel this Love Connection thing and leave my show right after Johnny Carson, because that's the way it's supposed to be. Well, apparently that call, by all accounts, did not go well. There was a guy, and I can't really tell you his name right now, but he was in Bill Bolser's office when this conversation between he and David Letterman took place. And Dave said, can you do this for us? And Bill Bolser said, no, I can't, and I'm not gonna. And then I guess it turned ugly because both sides figured we're not really getting along well here. And they started insulting one another to the point where David Letterman was insulting the University of Iowa, Bill Bolster's alma mater. And Bill Bolster, conversely, started making fun of Ball State, David Letterman's home school. This is a phone call going on between David Letterman and Bill Bolster in St. Louis. This sounds like something out of a Patty Chayefsky screenplay. I swear to you, this is all true. This is stuff that was going on behind the scenes that nobody knew anything about. And I couldn't say anything about it. It would have gotten me fired. Anyhow, now you fast forward a couple of years and David Letterman says, hey, next week we are going to be broadcasting from St. Louis at the Luggage Carousel Place. I go, oh, that's fantastic, because David Letterman tapes from 4:30 to 5:30 St. Louis time. I'll go out to the airport and we'll set up and we'll do a live report on Channel 5 during the actual taping of Late Night with David Letterman. This is going to be great. Well, unbeknownst to me, David Letterman's people, a couple of days before they came to St. Louis to do all of this, called Channel 5 and said, hey, look, you know, we're going to be here. Do you have a man or a woman, maybe an intern, maybe just, you know, somebody from the news department who could sort of meet us out there and sort of show us around a little bit, just hold our hand, maybe answer a couple questions, you know, whatever. Could you help us? Letterman, the night of the show, is telling this story on the air. The answer from Bill Bolster, by the way, was go fuck yourself. Well, all of this had transpired without me knowing anything about it at the time. So I go out there and we set up, and now I'm just sort of standing around waiting for my cue and my earphone, you know, to for them to say, okay, JC, you're coming up next after the commercial break. Get ready, get in front of the camera. We're turning on the lights, blah, blah, blah. I notice that Letterman's people are sort of watching me out of the corner of their eye, but they're not doing anything about it. So I set up in front of the whole baggage carousel. Keep in mind, they're taping Letterman's show. I also set up. My camera lights come on. They go, JC, in 5, 4, 3, 2, go. And as soon as our camera lights for our live shot for Channel 5 popped on, here comes this entourage in my direction, and the NBC cameraman turns his lights on, and they come running over to me. And the cameraman has a little speaker on his belt, and I hear David Letterman talking to me. Well, I found out later, because we all had a big laugh about it, because what their plan was, they wanted to see what would happen to the local reporter if, in the middle of his live shot for KSDK-TV in St. Louis, would I play to my own camera or would I interrupt my own live shot for Channel 5 and turn to the NBC camera talking to David Letterman, which is what I did. Back in New York, everybody's laughing their ass off because Letterman's making jokes. He's making jokes about me. He's making jokes about the situation. He's making jokes about everything. The audience is laughing their asses off. The show airs later on that night. Everybody's like, oh, David Letterman made fun of you. It's like, this is the greatest thing in the world. I was on national TV. It was a riot. But, you know, all of those stories, all those books that have been written, you know, about the late night TV wars and the war going on between Letterman and Leno and all that sort of stuff, that's one of those stories that, you know, I wish that somebody had asked me about, because maybe I would have gotten into one of those books where they were chronicling all of that stuff. The stuff that goes on behind the scenes, it's like 30 Rock. You watch 30 Rock and you're like, what a crazy place that would have been to work at. It's not that far from the truth. It really isn't. I love animals. You know that we always adopt black animals. We always do the rescue of black animals because people don't adopt black animals, and therefore they are euthanized at a rate that's something like 80% above other colored animals, you know, animals with different kinds of coats. There is the black stereotype in the minds of some sort of goofed up people. There are people who believe that there are connotations involving black cats, and therefore they do not want them. And it even goes over to dogs. If you have a black dog, that dog is far less likely to be adopted and far more likely to be euthanized simply because it is black. And one of the really dumb reasons that people give is that they don't photograph well, which is nonsense. I get, you know, we got Luna here. I got tons of pictures of her, and they're all wonderful. So anyhow, we always adopt black animals. So I'm one of those people who likes to think that they know more about pets than other people, and that part of my job is to know stuff to tell you about. Every once in a while, something like this happens where I actually turn to the microphone and say, I need some help here, because the absurdity of me walking around thinking that I know more about anything than anybody else is pretty riotous. So anyhow, let me get to the point here. Victor is our oldest cat. He is now 16 years old. And for about the last year, during the day, Victor walks around the house and just meows over and over and over and over again, to the point of it just driving you nuts. It's almost like when you got a baby in the house and the baby won't be quiet. I mean, there are people who become so overwhelmed by the pressure of a crying baby. You know what happens. Sometimes you take a swing at the little baby. So anyhow, Victor, who has been a great cat, a terrific companion, love him to death, but for like the last year during the day, he just walks around and will not stop meowing. It's all, my wife and I were talking about it. It's like, it's almost like he's trying to tell us something, but there's nothing wrong with him. We had him checked out at the vet and everything. Plus, he has his regular stops at the vet. They're like, okay, I mean, for a 16-year-old cat, he's actually doing pretty damn well. We just don't know, though, what is going on. Yeah, anybody ever have a cat that just walks around and won't shut up? And can somebody tell me if Wally is dead or alive? For God's sakes, what is going on? You know, I'd heard on pretty good authority late last week that actor Tony Dow was about on his way out. And so that's what I put up on Facebook. I said, I'm hearing that you know, he might not have long. People immediately start commenting, oh yeah, I read that he's sick, or he's got cancer, or he's under treatment, or he's in the hospital, right? No, it's not what I was saying. I know all that. What I'm telling you, what I'm trying to tell you, is that the end is really, really near. Oh yeah, JC, didn't you read? He's sick, but he's still alive. He's doing okay. It's like, no, that's not what I'm telling you. Anyhow, yesterday, a couple of prominent news sources all start flooding social media and the internet with actor Tony Dow dead at the age of 78. I, of course, see that. I go with it right away, tell you about it. And a couple of hours later, all of a sudden, people start doing retractions. Actor Tony Dow is not dead. He's in hospice, and he probably only has hours left, but he's still alive. So I think, you know, by the time you listen to this, Wally may have left the building. Nobody won the lottery. So it looks now like, what is it? Yep, I guess they say it's not going to be a billion dollar jackpot. Wow. There are people who have you believing that they can figure out a system, these mathematicians or these, you know, savants with numbers. And the scary part about it is there are stories where people have won the lottery like 20 or 30 times. So they are doing something. They're not sharing that with us, obviously, because then that's less for them. Don't start me on the Cardinals, who lost again last night. Yeah, we didn't have two of our players, and we won't tonight either. And by the way, we found out, because the game was in Toronto last night, that when one of their guys hits a home run, they sound that foghorn. They'll go out of their way to turn everything into hockey if you let them up there. The mayor of Chicago, who is a very, very frightening-looking woman, Mayor Lightfoot, not exactly an oil painting, but surfaced yesterday with a plan for Soldier Field in Chicago, right on the lakefront. When I was a kid, I spent many a day there with my dad. My dad would take me to the Army-Navy game, went to a lot of Bears games there, saw Walter Payton live right there in the flesh break Jim Brown's all-time rushing record against the New Orleans Saints back in October of 1984. Because you're like, you know, a couple of hundred yards off Lake Michigan, you get those games in December, January. Jeez. The exposure to the elements is indescribable. So yesterday, Mayor Lightfoot said, oh, we don't want the Bears, because the Bears are talking about moving out to the suburbs. They want a new stadium. And so yesterday, the mayor says, okay, here's our plan. $2.2 billion. They're, oh, blah, 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 blah. Did you just say billion with a B? Yeah, $2.2 billion. We're going to put a dome over the place. But because the price is what it is, and because some of that price would be shared between the city of Chicago and the Chicago Bears, the Bears did not sound interested yesterday. Back on this date in 1984, Rod Stewart played the arena on this date in 87. Jack Buck was inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. In 04, the U.S. Senior Open took place out at Belle Reve. I closed on my house in Olivet in the Chevy Chase subdivision on this date back in 2007. And in 2013, I was standing just outside the Cardinal dugout on the field at Wrigley Field in Chicago when word surfaced that there was a guy by the name of Colton Wong that the Cardinals had just picked up. And I'm looking around going, hold it. Where is he going to play? Second base. Well, hold it a minute. Matt Carpenter plays second base. And then David, uh-oh. And then I realized that that's the end of David Fries. They brought in Colton Wong because they were moving Matt Carpenter to third. Wong would play second, and the odd man out is David Fries. So I start walking around, and I got this figured out in my head, and I start talking to some of the Chicago reporters going, do you understand what's going on here? This is less than 2 years after the incredible performance in Game 6 against the Texas Rangers where, you know, we will see you tomorrow night, David Fries. And here it is a year and a half later. They're getting rid of him. And a couple of Chicago reporters are like, you're crazy. That's not what's happening here. I'm like, yes, it is. I was right. They were wrong. Hardy, har, har. Presumed Innocent opened on the stage back in 1990. Also, My Blue Heaven. Boy, that was a rotten movie. You put Rick Moranis and Steve Martin together and you think you got something and you didn't have anything. That was on the stage back in 1990. What I will simply call the Bryan Adams ugliness took place on this date back in 1985. So at the time, I was doing the morning show, the old morning zoo on Keishi, and there was bad blood between us and KWK. KWK couldn't figure out any way to beat us, so they resorted to dirty tricks. So prior to the Bryan Adams concert in St. Louis, a week before, we were talking about Bryan Adams, and my partner, my on-air partner, made a disparaging comment about the condition of Bryan Adams' skin on his face, which, as you know, would not be described as smooth, okay? So it's a couple of days later, the concert's over, I go sauntering in backstage to talk to Bryan Adams, to do an interview with him, and he's just looking at me like daggers are shooting out of his pupils, lava's coming out of his ears. He's pissed. Well, you know why? Because just a couple of moments prior to all of this, some low-life bacteria at KWK went in there and said, hey, you guys are going to be talking to that J.C. Corcoran guy from the local radio station here. Listen to what he said about you, which is interesting because even me, it was my on-air partner, and he made a disparaging comment about his skin, and they played the recording of that for Bryan Adams. What do you get out of that other than to A, be a creep, B, upset Bryan Adams, C, did I mention you're a creep? Again, behind the scenes stuff. I was on this date in 1992. I had lunch with the general manager of Channel 4 about coming to work over there, which I ended up doing and working there for something like 7 years. Man, there were some head cases in that Channel 4 newsroom. As much as Channel 5 was an incredibly exciting place to work with some of the greatest broadcast and newsroom professionals I'll ever be able to say I was ever around. And there were some really dedicated people at Channel 4, too. The only problem was there were some real whack jobs in there, too. Now, I've talked about this before. One of our assistant news directors was a guy by the name of Tom Bell. And he was a real smart guy, but he wasn't what I would call big on personality. And not everybody can go, you know, prancing around the newsroom telling jokes. I totally understand that. And this was one of those guys who was sort of serious. And, you know, he was there as a manager to make sure that you were doing your job and that the product coming off the television screen at Channel 4 was the best possible product. So he's a total pro, good guy. And I knew he had young kids, really young kids. One of those kids turned out to be a very attractive and very talented actress by the name of Kirsten Bell. So that was sort of fun. But then they brought in this news director. They brought this guy in by the name of Gary Whitaker, and he was nuts. Just insane. He was trying to reinvent the wheel, completely reinvent how television news was being done, and he picked us at Channel 4 to be able to do it, and also hired some of the stupidest people I have ever known. There was this guy by the name of Billy Saul. What the hell was Billy's last name? I can't remember. Billy something. So, you know, Channel 4, 1 Memorial Drive, heart of downtown St. Louis. They had already started cutting the budget, which meant that when you said, okay, I got a story, I need a crew, I need a cameraman, sound guy, let's go. And they're like, we don't have one. Everybody's busy. Everybody's out doing other stories. And you're like, yeah, but I got this story. Well, we don't have a crew. Sorry, it's going to have to wait. And again, I'm going to tell you this part of the story right now. And later on today, you're going to say, he made that up. I'm telling you, there were people. Ask Doug Vaughn. Okay, ask him. He was there. He remembers this too. Remember I said they hired some really dumb people sort of in middle management positions? So this guy actually says they needed to have a crew over at the ballpark, because back then not every single game was televised. So what you had to do is you had to take your own camera out there and shoot the entire ball game from the press box and then bring that back and edit. And that was the only way you got to see what had happened at the ball game that night, because there was a handful of games that were not televised. So this assistant news director, they're like, well, but we need a crew. We're going to miss the whole first part of the ball game. And this guy actually says to them, well, We'll have a camera ready by, I don't know, like the fourth or fifth inning. That's when they score all the runs anyhow. And then he just walked away. Like what he said had even a molecule of truth. But the best one was, it was something like 4 p.m. It's an hour before the news is going on the air, and there's news over at the ballpark involving Tony La Russa. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he had some sort of major announcement over at the ballpark prior to batting practice. So it's like I said, about 4 p.m. And this assistant news director told the guys in the sports department, we don't have a crew. Why don't you just tell Tony La Russa to walk over here to the station? Now, the image of Tony La Russa in his full uniform, by the way, walking 4 blocks from Busch Stadium over to 1 Memorial Drive in the middle of the afternoon, that image, Tony is walking down the streets of St. Louis in his Cardinal uniform. This is what this guy said they should do. Oh, brother, I worked in that newsroom for 7 years, and the stuff that I saw. And again, there were a lot of really, really good broadcast professionals in and out of there, too. But it's just that, as opposed to Channel 5, where everybody was like really good and it was really exciting, Channel 4 was like, well, there's a lot of good people, but there's some real, real wingnuts in this place. All right, series premiere on Disney Plus today. It's a 6-part docuseries about the Industrial Light and Magic, the special effects studio founded by George Lucas in 1975 to create Star Wars. Late night tonight, Neil Patrick Harris on with Jimmy Fallon. Colbert has Amanda Seyfried. Maren Morris on with Seth Meyers. Birthdays today, Alex Rodriguez. How do you let J-Lo slip away? But he did, 47. Maya Rudolph, who you heard at the beginning of the show today, is 50, formerly of Saturday Night Live. From the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, Bill Engvall, 65. Peggy Fleming, who won some gold medals back in the 1960s for ice skating, 74. Betty Thomas, from St. Louis, by the way, and from Hill Street Blues, and then she directed a lot of really funny movies, including the Brady Bunch movie. She's 75 today. Bobby Gentry, Ode to Billy Joe. It was the 3rd of June. Another sleepy, dusty doll today. They have her listed here as either 78 or 80. Nobody seems sure. And the guy who gave us All in the Family, the Jeffersons, One Day at a Time, Good Times, Maude, and who back in the 1970s especially held up a mirror to what was going on in America and produced some of the most legendary television shows. He's a legend himself, turning the big 100 years old today, Norman Lear. Speaking of 100, 19 years ago today, 2003, Bob Hope died of pneumonia. He was 100. Arguably one of the best debut albums for a pop star came out 39 years ago today, 1983. Madonna, the self-titled debut album. That was the one with Holiday, Lucky Star, and Borderline, which I think is one of the great pop records ever made. Prince, Purple Rain, opened nationwide on this date in 1984. Pete Rose passed Ty Cobb's record for the most singles in a career with 3,503. Nancy Wilson of Heart married Jerry Maguire director Cameron Crowe on this date, 1986. They divorced in 2010. And today is National Scotch Day. Here's a fun fact. The top three consumers of scotch in the world, number one, the United States. Number two, France. Number three, Rudy Giuliani. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Wednesday, July 27, 2022 is in the can. 108 days remaining in our American democratic system of government. As we have known it, we're here every weekday morning unless we have an emergency like yesterday. Sorry about that, but most days, just after 7 o'clock, you can, it's free. You can email me, JC at jcontheline.com, Facebook, the Showgram with J.C. Corcoran, an announcement that a lot of you, I think, are going to be very, very happy about coming in just days. Now, and I know I've said that before, but now when I say days, I mean days. It's almost here. I can finally say it's almost here. It's within reach. And don't worry, you're not going to miss anything. When the time is right, we're going to tell you all about it. I promise you're not going to miss. I will let you know everything that's happening. Like I said, you don't have to wait much longer. So, with that, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.